Welcome to today's Inspiring Women with your host, Deanne DeMarco. On today's program, you'll meet the next business and entrepreneurial rising star. You'll learn from their successes, challenges, and life lessons to find out what has made them recognized in their fields. Now, here is your host, Deanne DeMarco.
Welcome to today's Inspiring Women. I'm your host, Deanne DeMarco, and each week we try to connect you with extraordinary women exploring their careers, successes, tips, and ideas to help you spark your career and life growth. And we've got a great show for you today. Today we're going to be talking about a lady who has really had to struggle with some unexpected adversity in her life, and she's been able to pull that off and really succeed with that. And she's got some tips and strategies for us, for people who may be facing similar adversity in our lives. And in the second half of the show, we're going to be talking about performance management. For those of you who are managers and leaders and you're trying to have your employees perform at their highest levels, that's what we're going to be talking about in the second half of the show. So I'd like to introduce you to our first guest, Dr. Maria Malater, or Doc Maria, she prefers to be called, is a chief change agent and navigating the ride of change. And she's going to be talking about that in a little bit. Doc Maria has been internationally interviewed for her leadership, change management, and Encore career projects. She's been quoted by the Chicago Tribune, Engineering Today, and the Daily Herald. Her thought leadership, inspiring speaking has wowed international and national audiences alike. Beyond riding her bicycle almost every day, Dr. Maria serves on faculty for graduate-level courses in business psychology, organizational leadership, and business administration at the Chicago School of Professional Psychology, Webster University, and Concordia University in Portland. Well, life was not always smooth sailing for Dr. Maria. At one point in her life, she had to reassess her career and how she led her life after experiencing a brain injury due to a car accident. She was faced with several months of recovery, a career and life values assessment. During her journey of recovery and life reinvention, she discovered many people needed guidance on how to really love their lives and how to make simple shifts to lead more fulfilling lives. And I'm anxious to introduce you to Doc Maria. Maria, welcome to today's Inspiring Women.
Hi, Deanne. It's great to be on the show. I'm thrilled, and I want to thank you for having me here because I can't wait to share this information.
Yeah. You know, tell us a little bit about your story.
Oh, sure. Well, as you kind of said in the introduction, it was about March of 2010, and I was really super excited about life. I had this great professor position. I was director of a Center for Positive Aging I created, and things were going really well. But I was on my way back from a Bible study, and all of a sudden, I rear-ended somebody. Oh. You know, I didn't feel injured at that time. I felt fine. I just had kind of a bent-up and bumped-up car. But I went on with my life normally, and then I started experiencing these extreme headaches and memory loss, and I was eager to anger. And I was actually unable to stop saying what I was thinking, as far as I didn't have any filters.
Oh, dear.
Everything that I was thinking would come right out of my mouth. Like if I thought someone was gorgeous in the grocery store, it would just come right out of my mouth.
Anyway,
that wasn't what I was like before. I had some nice filters. And so my personality started to change too, and I had so much memory loss, and I ended up getting released from my job. Because, as you had said, I had experienced a traumatic brain injury, and we didn't know for a little bit. So it was just all these changes happening. And so I lost my job as a professor, lost my identity, lost my short-term memory, and my executive functions of my brain. And that's reasoning and problem-solving and planning and execution. So, frankly, I felt like I lost everything.
Oh, my gosh. So you would just say things? I mean, so if you thought someone was really ugly, you'd say, man, that guy's really ugly.
Well, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, actually, I had to be careful when I was in stores. So, and if I really liked what was going on, I would just burst out and clap really loud, or just, I would just respond without holding back.
So you're responding inappropriately, obviously.
Yes. Yes.
That could be problematic in a lot of areas of your life.
Yeah, it was.
Oh, dear.
I'm sure some of the people that I thought were really beautiful in the grocery store kind of appreciated it and I made their day. But other things that came out, probably didn't go very well.
Yes. So what were the steps that you took to overcome your injury? Was there a cure for this? Or I mean, how did you go about doing that?
Well, actually, when it comes to kind of traumatic brain injuries, everybody's different. And so as soon as I found out, luckily I had a good medical team. And so I had a regular physician, physical therapist, social workers, neurologists, and a neuropsychiatrist all on the case. And we did a bunch. So I had a team. So I was very thankful for that. And we did normal testing, but also not so normal testings as far as medical testings, but also kind of psychological tests to kind of understand what I could comprehend and how I could problem solve. And those were kind of challenging tests. So there was a lot of physical therapy and then plenty of prescriptions that came along with that. But beyond the medical team and taking their recommendations, I did some other interesting activities to help heal, and part of that was singing, bicycling, doing photography, yoga. I did some dance movement therapy, and also I changed what I was eating. So I kind of took a hard look at what was the food I was eating, and I did a lifestyle change, and I took all processed food and gluten and dairy out of my diet. So I just kind of had natural foods, and I started to explore how I could eat vitality and what gave me energy, and then looked up and talked to some people about what was the best food to heal my brain. So I also took caffeine out too, which some people are shocked about. But I took that out too because I just wanted to be as natural as I could.
Mm-hmm. So did the doctors go along with this program? I mean, did they say that this was the kind of thing you needed to do to heal, or...
I talked to him a little bit, but I kind of created it myself. I was just trying to follow my intuition, and I said, what would work here? But some of the therapists did recommend make sure that you're doing activities like yoga that kind of works on both sides of your brain, and then singing is also kind of works that way too. So it was all about how could I balance both sides of my body to kind of, I guess, reconnect the two sides of my brain.
Mm-hmm. I had heard about singing once before that might be a good therapy. So it's interesting that you brought that up. So do you sing well, or are you driving people crazy with your singing?
I can't say that I sing well in the beginning. That's for sure. So I actually still don't even know how to read music. I'm still learning how to do that. So, but I do feel like I sing well now, but that's because I've been in the choir for a couple of years and I also have been taking voice lessons. So I've been able to train my voice more.
So what made you think about singing and bicycling to help you heal?
Well, it was somewhat, I would call it intuition and then divine intervention. So we have this great music ministry at our church, and so everybody's kind of inspired by that. So when a Groupon popped up in my computer that said singing lessons, I jumped in and took that. And then as the fall came around, because the accident was in March and I had lost my job, so in the fall I wouldn't be teaching night classes, so the music director asked me to join the choir, and I said, okay. I'll try that, but the only place I've really sang is in my car because I don't sing in my shower. So that's how it kind of got started. So, and then what happened is as I was continuing along, the singing made me happy, and it was great to be around more people. And because my life got kind of small after I lost my job, all those kind of social pieces. So I was at the doctor, and I said, oh, I'm singing. I like this. And I started to sing the lyrics of the song, and he said, stop. Wait a minute. He said, because of your brain scans and what you've been through, there's really no way that you could be remembering these lyrics because you lost all your short-term memory.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that's when we discovered it was a way to heal. So I thought it was a combination of, one, a miracle, and then, two, this was my path for healing. Because then I was able to kind of instill the singing into other parts of my life to restore my short-term memory, such as if I went to the mall. And because I would go to the mall and I wouldn't remember where I parked my car. So I would sing the aisles of where I parked my car to be able to find it.
So the singing really helped you with your longer term memory.
Yeah, it completely helped me restore the memory, which was great.
Isn't that interesting?
And yeah, I was really so happy about that. Of course, people thought it was funny when I was in the parking lot singing my lanes, but that was okay. It was what I needed to do.
See, I'm in the L lane in the fourth spot.
Yes, it was like A14. So that was a little bit about the singing, and then the bicycling came out because I had to figure out a way to get off all the antidepressant medications I was on.
Well, sure.
Mm-hmm. And so the medications, I'm a very kind of upbeat person, and they were really numbing my personality, and it was slowing down my ability to think clearly and process information, and even my speaking was a little delayed. So I had to figure out a way to get off those medications. So I started riding my bike every day in the summer of 2011. And I thought, okay, I'm going to get a healthier body, and then hopefully the endorphins from the exercise would be able to change my whole body chemistry so I wouldn't have to be on the medicines anymore. So I was really happy because by fall of 2011, I was able to be medication-free.
So it did help then?
Yeah, it completely helped, and I was so happy. Because I really wanted to get back to my personality. And so, but it wasn't, I had to start slow, but it did take some time. So in 2011, I about biked 500 miles in the second half of the year. So.
That's pretty far. So your doctor surprised so they were surprised by the singing. Were they also surprised by the bicycling as well?
Yeah, they were. They were just very happy for me because they wanted me to get back to my personality too. But yeah, because it has, I guess, actually the other day I just read an article about how if you combine the exercise to kind of overcome being on medications, it has a longer term effect, like a longer chance of lasting if you continue to exercise to not need those kind of medications.
Hmm.
So I thought that was great.
Isn't that interesting? So how did you keep motivating yourself to keep going?
So I mean, I have a big, strong sense of faith. So I always think, okay, so I guess I always believe in miracles, so I'm always expecting a miracle. So part of it was that, and that everything happens for a reason. I like to create affirmations for myself. And mm-hmm. So one of my affirmations was, every day is another day to be well. So I thought that was something that I told myself. And then on kind of a more creative note, what I did is I visualized me getting better. And so I really believe in creative visualization, seeing myself getting well. And so I actually drew pictures of what my future could look like on, I guess, just blank sheets of white paper, and then I would hang them on the refrigerator and look, and I would put words with that too, like I'm well, and I'm happy, I'm healthy, and of course wealthy. That mm-hmm. has to go on there too. But all these great little pictures of what I wanted to be doing and what my life would look like.
That's really a great idea. You know, we need to take a quick break here. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about how you were able to get your sense of identity and restart your career again. But this is Deanna DeMarco, today's Inspiring Women. We'll be right back.
One of the biggest challenges facing corporate America today is accountability. Lack of accountability results for more than 50% of all business failure. Lack of responsibility, strategy, and follow-up are just some of the culprits that kill accountability. Deanne DeMarco knows firsthand how to drive accountability in your business or organization. Deanne DeMarco is one of the most sought-after advisors and coaches in corporate America. Companies that use Deanne as their company coach often call her their chief accountability officer. Your company or business will grow with Deanne as your CAO. Call 866-91-COACH or email deanne@deannedemarco.com for more information.
My name's Ken, and I am as general a contractor as you'll find. I do
kitchen remodeling, additions, plumbing, painting. Ken does it all. And I'm Mandy,
the owner of the UPS store in my neighborhood. And Mandy here does it all, too. She
handles Ken's packing and shipping. Because when you're remodeling a bathroom and a client
changes their mind on a light fixture or a mirror, Mandy packs it up and ships it out. She also
helps Ken promote his business, like with these new brochures we printed, new business cards.
And the flyers are great, too. In fact, when I'm at a job and I'm expecting a delivery, delivery?
I signed for it. I even let him know with a text or email.
Since I got a mailbox at the UPS store. I have to say, as much as I love being on my own, I'm not alone. I've got Mandy here.
To help with the heavy lifting?
Well, figuratively speaking.
I'm Steve, and I just opened my own barbecue restaurant. I'm the sauce master, but I'm no expert in printing.
And I'm Mary. I own the UPS store in Steve's neighborhood, and I help with professional printing like flyers and posters to promote Steve's restaurant. Steve loves being on his own.
But I'm not alone, thanks to Mary.
To find a locally owned center near you, visit theupsstore.com. We love small businesses. We love logistics. The UPS store franchise locations are independently owned and operated. Services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary by location. See center for details.
To find a locally owned center near you, visit theupsstore.com. We love small businesses. We love logistics. The UPS store franchise locations are independently owned and operated. Services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary by location. See center for details.
Become a sponsor and position your company to the fastest growing market segment, the women's business market. Your organization has the opportunity to be positioned front and center to the women's business market by becoming a sponsor of today's Inspiring Women with host Deanne DeMarco. The show is broadcast weekly and features guests who are prominent and successful women business owners and influential executives. Businesses that fail to recognize the power of the woman buyer are leaving money on the table. Increase your market share to the fastest growing market segment by becoming a sponsor for today's Inspiring Women. Call 708-836-0118 for more information or email Deanne directly at info@deannedemarco.com.
You are tuned into Today's Inspiring Women with Deanne DeMarco. We'd love to hear your questions and comments about our program. Please send an email to Deanne at deannedemarco.com. That's D-E-A-N-N-E at deannedemarco.com. Now, back to Today's Inspiring Women.
Welcome back. This is Deanne DeMarco, Today's Inspiring Women. We have Dr. Maria on the line, who is a woman who had to really reinvent herself after a serious brain injury from a car accident. And Dr. Maria, we just before the break, you were talking about how singing and bicycling helped you heal, and your little daily inspirations that you put on your refrigerator to kind of help keep yourself motivated. So how did you recover your sense of identity and restart your career? How did that work?
Well, I had some advice from someone on my team, and they said they recommended that I got a career coach. And so I went ahead and took that recommendation. I was so scared at the beginning because I didn't know who I was. But then I met with her, and what we had the opportunity of doing is we took a look at my work values. We took some assessments about motivated skills, and then also looked at what I was interested in, how I wanted to contribute to the world. So I ended up finding out my core motivational skills are around teaching, counseling, performing, and portraying images, which is a little bit about my love of photography. And so she, I guess it would be the bird tossing you out of the nest, she encouraged me to jump out there and explore all those areas. And so I started volunteering, leading some team building and everything for the youth at our church. And then also I volunteered to design a program on leadership and self-efficacy for a Women's Institute on Global Leadership. And then for my photography, I started to actually exhibit it with a local art league. So I tried those things on. And then she also coached me to make sure that I set up a schedule for my day. So I guess similar as if I was going to work, what would that look like? And so as I was doing career searching and exploring and also doing informational interviews. And so as I was exploring that, I kind of was able to kind of draw a picture of what I wanted to do next. And reestablish my identity and say, these are my core areas where I want to spend my most time. And then let me look at the kinds of organizations I could do that for.
So the question I have is, so is your identity today different than it was prior to your car accident?
In some ways, I would say I'm more focused. It's not that I'm not as focused around my career, but I'm not, I see the world as a bit bigger for me. So I'm still doing some of the same things I did before, but I changed the area that I'm focusing on. So before I was more in behavioral science and that kind of area, and now I'm more in business and then helping general people do well in business. So that was the shift.
I see. Okay. So I was just kind of interested because you kept talking about your personal identity, having to reestablish that. So do you remember what your former identity was, or has it slowly come back to you what it was?
Does that make sense? Yes, absolutely. It slowly came back because even though this sounds like this went pretty smooth, it did not. Mm-hmm. And so I mean, to be really candid, I'm pretty outgoing, but I wasn't when this happened. And so I would actually be kind of scared to even go to the grocery store and leave my house. And then the other part is so much of my identity is I lost so many friends when I lost my job. So then that kind of piece changed. So there was not that same social support network that I had before. So then I had to reestablish, well, who was in my circle? So that was something that was different, too, for me. And then also being thinking about how I spend my time. But you're right. Going back to your original question, I didn't remember who I was. And there was a lot of memory loss that I had, and I had pockets of old memories that I also lost, too.
Oh, dear.
So, and I would actually not remember people's names, and there were certain situations that I wouldn't remember either. Some of those pieces disappeared, and actually what was helpful is the supportive group that was around me, they would say, come on, Maria, this is who you are. This is your personality. And we really want that back.
Wow, interesting. So what advice would you have for others who are either have a loved one who's going through this or through severe trauma or adversity in their lives?
Sure, yeah. I think the best thing is, what I learned is definitely be a strong advocate for others if you see someone that is going through adversity, and also learn how to, if you can, be an advocate for yourself and just kind of take a stand and say, I want to be well, or whatever kind of situation, I want to get through this, and then reach out and ask for those resources. I also think people need to keep a realistic perspective on when they're going through adversity. I kind of compare it to the movement of a snow globe. So some days that snow globe is going to be really shaken up and it's going to be a terrible blizzard. Other days it might just be waving a little and it'll be have a couple of flurries, and then some days it'll be clear and some sunny. So it's just that there's going to be a lot of different emotional roller coasters along with it. I also have to think about when I'm comparing things to my bicycle and kind of navigating through the ride of change. I think trauma and adversity is all really about change, and it's how we think or how we think about it and move forward. I put it in an acronym of RIDE. And so first you have to take some risks. So for me, I joined the choir when I didn't even read music. So it was being able to take a risk. The I is innovating, and so you have to be innovative. And so you have to try different things and not be afraid to try different things to get through it. D is deciding, and so you have to decide that you're going to get through it, even if it's a micro movement or a little baby step. So it's just deciding that you're going to take some action. And then last is E, in enduring. And so it's just moving through adversity is difficult. So you have to keep that vision alive that you're going to get through it and keep plugging away every day. So you're building that endurance.
Oh, I really like that. So the R was for taking risk. The I was be innovative. That's where you tried your photography and tried other things. And the D is deciding, just deciding to keep moving forward. And then the E, enduring, just to keep going.
Yes.
Kind of like the pedals on a bike. You have to just keep moving those pedals around.
Right, because if you don't, you're going to fall right over.
Yeah, I really, really like that. And then I like the other things that you have given people, which I think are some really good keys also. You talked about being realistic. I mean, how important is that? I mean, you're not going to heal overnight.
I mean, I agree with that because it's just, I mean, even though it seems like a short time for me, I mean, every day was such a long day. When I didn't have an identity, it just seemed like it lasted forever. But I had to keep going and had to have people that believed in me and I believing in myself to say, I'm going to get through this.
Yeah, I like that. You know, and the other thing I really liked that you talked about was putting those affirmations on your refrigerator. And I think that's a really important piece as well. Just kind of keep reminding yourself that this is my goal. This is where I'm going. So you just kind of keep moving.
Yeah, I think it's great. Even if it's just a word or a theme, like my current theme in life is I want to be love, courage, and contribution. So if I think about that all the time, it's my affirmation. Okay, when I'm looking at a situation, how can I be love? How can I be courage? How can I be contribution in this?
Mm-hmm. So what are some of the things that you are doing now?
So now I'm still, do you mean career-wise, or do you just mean in overall in general, I guess?
Well, yeah, like in your career. What are you doing now with your career?
Well, so right now I'm teaching for three different colleges, and I'm teaching in the business aspect. So I teach in business administration and industrial and organizational psych, and then also business psychology. And it's really great for me because some of the classes I'm teaching, I mean, one is research, and that's just so fascinating to me of how we actually set up research projects, and then also guiding people as they do service learning projects, which is completely lined up with me and contribution. So I'm out there lining my students up with different businesses and nonprofits to actually get out and get some real-world experience. So that's something that's different, I guess, that I did before. I guess I'd call my career kind of a portfolio career because it's a combination of the different teaching and then having my own business of professional speaking, coaching, and consulting. And then I also created a foundation called the Do What You Love Foundation to help people to get to do what they love.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about your foundation.
Well, I'm real excited about it. It is, the core part is, of course, to help people do what they love. And it's not that they have to make a complete career shift, but at least where they're looking at something so they could do something every day that they love. So in the umbrella of the whole foundation, we'll have several different classes that we'll offer to help people guide them to finding out how to do what they love, but also to find out what may be blocking them. Or there are also classes to kind of reinvent themselves for the second act. So that's second act, meaning if someone has retired or they're in the middle of their career and they don't like it anymore, they can shift. Beyond the classes, we have several career coaches that are part of the organization. So there are business coaches, there are general career coaches, there are general life coaches that also can help people work on it. And then the foundation part is that we're raising money to be able to give people grants to try on something to do what they love. So one of the grants that we gave before was a scholarship for a person who is in a wheelchair who's always wanted to be a stand-up comedian, and we gave him a scholarship to take classes at Second City in Chicago.
Oh, cool. That's really, really cool. You know, I really like, you know, one of the things I keep hearing and as you're speaking, your whole ride Ackerman keeps coming through in everything that you're talking about, which I think is shifting careers, you know, just like in shifting a bicycle. I think it's really interesting that everything just seems to be really congruous, you know, how it's all kind of coming together. So how do people get hold of you?
Well, the best way, one of the best ways to get a hold of me is definitely through my website, which is docmaria.com. And so where they can go ahead and link through to email me there. They also can sign up for a newsletter. Mm-hmm. So, you know, getting information about different things, you know, different hot topics that are coming about, stories and also tips. They also can look through and look at the foundation website, which is dowhatyoulovefoundation.org, and that's another way to find out more information there.
I think that's really kind of cool. So real quickly, what are some of the topics that you do keynote speaking you mentioned. What are some of those topics that you give?
Well, I have
keynotes on.
I give keynotes on navigating through the ride of change, shifting gears, flat tires, flat tires and bruises, overcoming adversity.
Cool.
So, and also visioning your life, it's just one snap at a time, and that has a photography piece embedded in it.
Well, that's very, very, very cool. So, again, that was docmaria.com. That's D-O-C, Maria, M-A-R-I-A.com. And is there a phone number that people can use to try and get a hold of you that way?
Oh, sure. It's 630-788-7333.
All right, very good. And the foundation is dowhatyoulove.org. Well, Doc Maria, our time is up. It just really flew by here. I'd like to thank you very much for being on today's Inspiring Women and sharing your story with us.
Well, Deanne, thank you so much for having me on the show. It's really been great, and I just hope that this touches people in a meaningful way.
I'm sure it will. I'm sure it will. You gave some really wonderful advice. Well, we need to take a quick break here. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about performance management and how to get your employees to bring their best every day. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. This is Deanne DeMarco.
One of the biggest challenges facing corporate America today is accountability. Lack of accountability results for more than 50% of all business failure. Lack of responsibility, strategy, and follow-up are just some of the culprits that kill accountability. Deanne DeMarco knows firsthand how to drive accountability in your business or organization. Deanne DeMarco is one of the most sought-after advisors and coaches in corporate America. Companies that use Deanne as their company coach often call her their chief accountability officer. Your company or business will grow with Deanne as your CAO. Call 866-91-COACH or email deanne@deannedemarco.com for more information.
I'm Steve, and I just opened my own barbecue restaurant. I'm the sauce master, but I'm no expert in printing.
And I'm Mary. I own the UPS store in Steve's neighborhood, and I help with professional printing like flyers and posters to promote Steve's restaurant. Steve loves being on his own.
But I'm not alone, thanks to Mary.
To find a locally owned center near you, visit theupsstore.com. We love small businesses. We love logistics. The UPS store franchise locations are independently owned and operated. Services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary by location. See center for details.
I'm Steve, and I just opened my own barbecue restaurant. I'm the sauce master, but I'm no expert in printing.
And I'm Mary. I own the UPS store in Steve's neighborhood, and I help with professional printing like flyers and posters to promote Steve's restaurant. Steve loves being on his own.
But I'm not alone, thanks to Mary.
To find a locally owned center near you, visit theupsstore.com. We love small businesses. We love logistics. The UPS store franchise locations are independently owned and operated. Services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary by location. See center for details.
You are tuned into Today's Inspiring Women with Deanne DeMarco. We'd love to hear your questions and comments about our program. Please send an email to Deanne@DeanneDeMarco.com. That's D-E-A-N-N-E @DeanneDeMarco.com. Now, back to Today's Inspiring Women.
Welcome back. This is Deanne DeMarco, Today's Inspiring Women, and this part of the hour, we're going to be talking about performance management. So if you're a leader or a manager or supervisor, how to get your employees to bring their best every day. And performance management is one of those areas, when I was a manager, that I always struggled with, because I'd have some employees that every day they would just bring their best, they'd bring their A game, and then I'd have other employees that just didn't, that just did their what they could to try and slide by. And so I was always looking at ways that how can I be the best manager I could where I get my employees to bring their A game every day. You know, so one of the real goals of a manager is to get the right results with and through people. I mean, we can't do it alone. We have to work with others in order to get all our goals met. So what can we do to help get our employees to bring their best game? Well, one of the things that you can do is to really take a look at the organizational goals and tasks and interests of the organization, and also to take a look at what are the individual interests of your employees. What do they really want to do? And then try and mesh those together, because the greater that alignment, the more likely your employees are going to be doing well. I mean, if you think about it, what would you do something differently if your employees were volunteers? Think about that a minute. If they were volunteers, wouldn't you try to match what they would want to do with some of the tasks that you have to get done? Well, it should be the same thing true in the organization as well. I remember one time I had this employee that worked for me. I was a manager of training and development in this organization. And this guy that I inherited was a horrible trainer. I mean, he was awful, monotone, just was not engaging. When I sat in on his class to evaluate all my trainers, I couldn't believe he had actually gotten a job as a trainer because he was really boring. I had a hard time staying awake listening to him. And so I went into his employee file and took a look at his background. And I realized he had a background in finance and economics. And so I brought him into my office and I said, so tell me, how did you get to come into the training department? How did that work for you? And he said, what I really would like to do is get into finance here at this company. But this was the only job that was open at the time, so I took it. Well, the light bulb just kind of like lit off my head. And I went, yeah. So I had a choice. I could either fire him because he really wasn't doing the job that he needed to be doing, or I could try and put him into the organization that could best utilize his skills and his interests, and which is exactly what I did. And once I did, he just flourished in the whole business side of the finance part of our corporation. So look at an employee's individual interests, because that greater that alignment of what it is they would like to be doing versus some of the goals and tasks that you have, you're going to have greater success in working with your employees. The other thing that I want to talk about with performance management is be looking at the type of feedback you're giving your employees. You need to understand that depending on the generation of your employee could make a big difference in how much feedback they want. For example, if you have anyone who is a traditionalist right now that is working for you, they or a baby boomer that is working for you, frankly, they really don't want a lot of feedback. They just as soon, no news is good news. They just don't want any feedback. If you're going to be calling them in their office, they're going to shake in their boots thinking that you're going to fire them. So they really don't want a whole lot of feedback. But if you have a Gen Xer or a millennial working for you, it's a totally different story. I mean, if you have a Gen Xer, now Gen Xers were typically born 1965 to 1980 and the millennials 1981 to about 2000. So if you have a Gen Xer working for you, they want feedback. They're looking forward to feedback. They want to know how they're doing. And if you have a millennial working for you, someone born 1981 to about 2000, they expect feedback. And the reason for that is the computer was introduced during the formative years of Gen X. And so they were used to getting feedback right away when working on the computer. And the millennial group started working with the computer before they went to grade school. So they were getting instant feedback in their video games before, right away. So they're used to getting instant feedback right away. So feedback is one of those areas that you need to be looking at as far as giving your employees the information they need to do their very best work. So the question I have for you is, how do you handle giving performance feedback? Is it an ongoing process? Is it a communication that you give once or twice a year? you need to understand that performance feedback should be an ongoing process, not something you do with employees once a year in a formal alignment conversation, you know, like with mid-year or end-of-year evaluations. It really should be something more frequent. And if you have your, at a bare minimum, really should be quarterly. When I was a manager, I used to have these alignment calibration sessions, as I call them, every month. Even when I had to manage departments with 30 employees in them, I still had these calibration sessions every month. So the employees got used to having them. So the employees knew that I would make them, you know, I try to keep them as unscary as I possibly could. So employees got used to being able to discuss their performance issues, how things were going, what's working, what's not working. And the more frequent I had them, the employees were able to really understand what mattered to me as a manager, what was really important. They were able to really get crystal clear on the expectations that I had for them. Because if the expectations aren't clear, your employees are never going to reach the expectation that you want. So these calibration sessions really helped with that. It was a way of also kind of tracking and monitoring employees' performance in a non-threatening way. So I was able to catch anything that wasn't working, if a case of project wasn't going quite right. I was able to catch that early by having these calibration sessions. You know, it was a way of providing that ongoing feedback and that ongoing coaching that employees need in order to develop properly. It was also a way of setting up boundaries for employees so employees knew if they were not going down the path that I wanted them to go. You know, for example, the other day, one of my favorite shows to watch on TV is MasterChef. And these three chefs asked all these would-be chefs to make a special type of pasta dish with a cheese filling in it. Well, this one guy decided that he was going to do it differently, and he put beet juice in the pasta, so it turned out all red, and then he put some sort of weird sauce on it. The original chefs had asked for just a plain pasta dish with the cheese inside with a simple red sauce, marinara sauce. So this guy produced something totally opposite of what they were looking for. Well, these calibration sessions are exactly the same way. It's a way of making sure that if you're asking for pasta, you're going to get pasta. You're not going to get, you know, something else. So these calibration sessions are really, really important. And it's a way of setting boundaries with your employees. You know, one of the things I want to talk about also with performance management are the three major dimensions of performance management. There's the performance planning piece, and that's where you sit down with your employee and actually plan out what needs to be done. There's the performance appraisal piece and the performance calibration piece. So with your performance planning piece, you need to be actually identifying what is the goal specifically, what is it going to look like, how's it going to be measured? How's the employee going to know they're winning and being successful in this, in doing this task or this project? Also looking at, is it really attainable? Is it realistic for the employee? And then also putting a timeline on it so they know exactly how much time they have to get this project or task complete. And that's called SMART. Maybe some of you might have used SMART before or heard of it anyway, but are you really using it? Specific, measurable, attainable, relevant, trackable or time-bound? How are you going to measure that the employee is doing it right so they can get the work done? So that's part of that whole performance planning piece, is deciding on the expectations, what needs to get done, the key results areas, and using SMART goals to make sure that it can get measured to make sure that the employee is winning. You know, we need to take a quick break here. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about some other aspects of performance management to help you in getting the best out of your employees every day. This is Deanne DeMarco, today's Inspiring Women. We'll be right back.
One of the biggest challenges facing corporate America today is accountability. Lack of accountability results for more than 50% of all business failure. Lack of responsibility, strategy, and follow-up are just some of the culprits that kill accountability. Deanne DeMarco knows firsthand how to drive accountability in your business or organization. Deanne DeMarco is one of the most sought-after advisors and coaches in corporate America. Companies that use Deanne as their company coach often call her their chief accountability officer. Your company or business will grow with Deanne as your CAO. Call 866-91-COACH or email deanne@deannedemarco.com for more information.
My name's Ken, and I am as general a contractor as you'll find. I do
kitchen remodeling, additions, plumbing, painting. Ken does it all. And I'm Mandy,
the owner of the UPS store in my neighborhood. And Mandy here does it all, too. She
handles Ken's packing and shipping. Because when you're remodeling a bathroom and a client
changes their mind on a light fixture or a mirror, Mandy packs it up and ships it out. She also
helps Ken promote his business, like with these new brochures we printed, new business cards.
And the flyers are great, too. In fact, when I'm at a job and I'm expecting a delivery,
I sign for it. I even let him know with a text or email.
Since I got a mailbox at the UPS store. I have to say, as much as I love being on my own, I'm not alone. I've got Mandy here.
To help with the heavy lifting?
Well, figuratively speaking.
To find a locally owned center near you, visit theupsstore.com. We love small businesses. We love logistics. The UPS store franchise locations are independently owned and operated. Services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary by location. See center for details.
Become a sponsor and position your company to the fastest growing market segment, the women's business market. Your organization has the opportunity to be positioned front and center to the women's business market by becoming a sponsor of today's Inspiring Women with host Deanne DeMarco. The show is broadcast weekly and features guests who are prominent and successful women business owners and influential executives. Businesses that fail to recognize the power of the woman buyer are leaving money on the table. Increase your market share to the fastest growing market segment by becoming a sponsor for today's Inspiring Women. Call 708-836-0118 for more information or email Deanne directly at info@deannedemarco.com.
You are tuned into Today's Inspiring Women with Deanne DeMarco. We'd love to hear your questions and comments about our program. Please send an email to Deanne@deannedemarco.com. That's Deanne@deannedemarco.com. Now, back to Today's Inspiring Women.
All right, so let's go on. We were talking about performance management. So let's talk about this a little bit further. One of the things I want to talk about is not only just setting the goals, but also giving feedback. There are three different types of feedback. One of them is reinforcing feedback. And I call that metacommunication. When you see it, say it. So reinforcing feedback is that feedback that when you see somebody doing something well, you say something so it gets repeated. Feedback that gets mentioned, especially when an employee is doing something well, gets repeated. Correcting feedback is that feedback when you see someone doing work that's not correct. When you see it, say it. You need to say something. Otherwise, the employee does not know to correct that feedback. So with reinforcing feedback as well as corrective feedback, you know, you need to come up with a specific time that you're going to talk to people. Use specific terms with people. I really appreciated the way you filled out that report. It really helped save me some time. So they know exactly what they did. With corrective feedback, in that report, the XYZ report, there were three errors. It would really help if you would check your work before you turned it in. So the employee knows what they are doing right or what they were doing wrong. Now, the third type of feedback is one that is really detrimental to an organization, and that is called erasure. Erasure is like the back of a, you know, if you have a pencil and it has a little eraser on it. Well, erasure feedback is that feedback that you don't give. So what happens if an employee is doing something well and you don't say something, well, the employee is going to be thinking, well, obviously it doesn't care to my boss. So, you know, maybe I'm just not going to do it so well next time. And feedback, if that's erasure, that it's when an employee is doing something poorly, if they're not doing good work, so you made those three errors on this report. If you don't say anything, if you're in the erasure mode, the employee is going to think, well, obviously, it's okay if I make errors. Maybe next time I'll be a little sloppier. Maybe there'll be 7 or 10 errors. And so the work will continue to go downhill. So it's really important for managers and leaders and supervisors to not work in an erasure mode. Is when you see it, say it. If you see good work, say so. If you see poor work, say so. So got to work in that, when you see it, say it mode, and definitely be praising your employees. One of the questions I'm asked in my management classes all the time, well, just how much am I supposed to praise my employees? And I would say as frequently as you can. Everybody loves being told thank you or being told you're doing a good job. And don't mix the messages. Don't say, well, you know, you really did a good job on the XYZ report, but you know that ABC report, you really did a horrible job. Save the negative feedback for a second conversation. Otherwise, they'll be waiting for that shoe to fall every time, and they won't really listen to the positive feedback that you gave them. Another thing you need to really be careful about in giving someone feedback is how you say it. You know, the real meaning of communication is the impact that it has on the other person. So you need to understand that with some employees, how you say something, some won't believe, especially if you're praising them, they won't believe that you're really praising them. If you're giving people corrective feedback, sometimes people are going to feel threatened about it. And some people will not see that they need to change for any reason. So when you're giving feedback, especially corrective feedback, explain the consequences of their actions so they understand what it is that they're doing and how it impacts either others or how it impacts the organization or how it impacts the process, the final result, the customer. There's a lot of different impacts that it can have. So give the rationale behind it. And make sure you're using real appropriate timing and language as well. You need to be really careful of you messages. If you start out especially a corrective feedback with a you piece, people are really going to get defensive. It's better to try and remain as neutral as possible. This report had three errors on it. You know, so be really, really clear on what you're saying. So I wanted to just kind of talk about that feedback piece about there is an instant feedback tool that is very, very effective. And it starts out with when you, then I feel, because, what I'd like, because. So it's when you, and then you describe the behavior. I feel, and then what's the feeling word? Feeling could be irritated, uneasy, fearful, anxious, worried, concerned, because that's the rationale. That's what you're giving your rationale. What I'd like, now you're saying, this is what I'd like to see changed. Because, and then you're giving your rationale again, and then what do you think? And that's a time for you to not say anything further so the person can respond. So when you, I feel, because, what I'd like, because, what do you think? And one of the questions I'm asked is, why do you have to put a feeling word in there? And the reason for that is because it makes you come across more human as compared to some dictator that the employee is working for. And you can just say, I feel upset, I feel concerned, I feel fearful, anxious, worried, you know, whatever, annoyed, you know, whatever that has to be the right feeling word with the situation. But it makes you feel a bit more, comes across more human. And the other thing I just want to mention about with performance management is make sure that you are keeping good records on all your performance management communication with your employees. In other words, write it down. Documentation is your friend. Need to document all of your alignment discussions with your employees. I would like to suggest that you do try the quarterly alignment discussions, or if you can, the monthly ones would even be better. And that's a great way of helping your employees to bring their A game every day that they come to work, because they know what you're looking for. They know what you want, and they know what your expectations are. A lot of times employees are really unclear of what it is you're looking for. So I would just want to talk a little bit about performance management. If you're looking for some corporate training in the areas of management skills, don't forget to give me a buzz or drop me a line, deanne@deannedemarco.com. And I'll be glad to come into your organizations and customize a program just for you and in your group. Or if you're looking for a keynote speaker, don't forget to give me a buzz as well. One of my favorite talks is You're Driving Me Crazy, and how to deal with the crazy people in your life that you have to work with it on a day-to-day basis. You know, every day and each week here at Today's Inspiring Women, I try and bring you extraordinary women to try and explore their career successes and their career strategies and tools and tips that they've used for success. And every week I end with a quote, and I'd like to end with a quote this week by Ralph Waldo Emerson, who is a poet and author. And he says, as long as a man stands in his own way, everything seems to be in his way. So your action for this week is to see if there is an area in your own personal or professional life where you may be your own worst enemy, and see if there's something that you can do to get out of your own way. Until next time, this is Deanne DeMarco with Today's Inspiring Women. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Today's Inspiring Women. Please join host Deanne DeMarco and other entrepreneurial and business leaders next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, on the Voice America Empowerment Channel. Have an outstanding week.